Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with some special bonus coverage here on Rob Has Podcast. I always enjoy it when we get to have a conversation about some things that may help you on the island if you ever get to play Survivor or in your everyday life. I love stuff like this. And so we had the opportunity with one of our longtime patrons. You hear him whenever we play our social media drops these days. We have the author of a book called How to Remember Everything here with us today to talk about six steps to have a better memory. Please welcome Jacob Sager Weinstein. Jacob, how are you?
Thank you. I am excited to be here. It's always a thrill.
Jacob, I feel like I need a drop to welcome you in.
I know. I should have had that.
Do you want a freestyle one right now?
I have to. If you give me the help, you freestyle the beat and I'll do the lyrics. How's that for a
okay?
Yeah, I'm here to talk about memory wherever you went, to Yale or Emory. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have brought such fire. I can see you're overwhelmed with the emotion, and it's not fair to do that to a mere mortal.
Oh my God.
You'll recover, I promise.
People are like, how do I learn how to not remember what just happened on the podcast?
Okay. Indeed, yeah.
Jacob, we're here to talk about memory. I'm very excited to, I feel like that, you know, having a quick recall, at least for me in the podcast, is something that I have to rely on a lot to go back to, like all these other seasons, remember all these other players. I feel like that just being a person online, I feel like that there's like hundreds of people that I have come into contact with. I find that it's often like if you're like talking with somebody and then you don't remember that you've talked to them before, it's very insulting for the other person. So like I really could use all the help I can get to try to improve my memory.
Okay, well, I'm happy to help, and I relate to you completely. The whole reason I got interested in memory techniques is that my memory is naturally really bad. Mm. Like, this stuff does not come easy to me. We have a family friend who was a Jeopardy champion, and I told him I was writing a book on memory, and he was like, "You don't need techniques, you just remember stuff." Mm-hmm. It's like, no, this is why you won Jeopardy, and I can't remember your name after knowing you for a decade.
Okay, Jacob, so we'll get into all of that. For people who are listening, do you want to give us a little bit of your background? Because I think it's a very interesting one.
Yeah, so I've done a whole bunch of random stuff. I was in LA for a few years writing for a TV show called Dennis Miller Live, which for your non-Gen X listeners, sort of like The Daily Show or Last Week with John Oliver. It was a weekly cable comedy show. I did that for a few years. My wife had followed me to Los Angeles, and every once in a while she'd say, like, "If I get a job in Europe, would you follow me?" And I was like, "Oh, of course I would." Yeah, it's a pretty safe promise to make. She got a job in London, so I followed her, and now I've been in London for close to 20 years. And I moved from sort of foul-mouthed comedy for grown-ups to mostly kids' books. Mm-hmm. So I write picture books, I write novels for slightly older kids.
Jacob, what part of the country were you from before you went to Los Angeles?
Washington, D.C.
Okay. All right. And you also, I know, follow the international Survivor very closely.
I do. I've been a fan, especially of South African Survivor. That is my favorite international flavor. Among the many difficulties of the past year is things got crazy, and I did not follow the last season of South African Survivor. I've got it queued up to watch and haven't. But that is my favorite.
Okay,
actually,
no
nowadays,
spoilers.
Honestly, even more than you. Okay, yeah, exactly. No spoilers. But sometimes even more than the U.S. one nowadays. I love South African Survivor.
Okay. All right. Six steps to get a better memory. Where do we start? Is there anything that we need to talk about before we get into the steps?
No, I mean, I'm happy just to dive into the steps. I think I always want to say again is that this does not come naturally to me.
Yeah.
And I really do think that memory, it's like any other skill, you can get better at it. Whatever level you're at, you can remember things better than you do now.
Yeah. I know the book that you wrote, How to Remember Everything, is focused on a little bit of a younger demographic, teenagers. Why did you focus on a memory book for teenagers?
So there are a whole bunch of books on these memory techniques. A lot of these memory techniques literally go back to ancient Greece. They're not new. But for some reason, we never teach kids or high school students how to memorize things. We just demand they memorize things without teaching them how. And so when I was a grown-up and I found out that, you know, people have known this stuff for thousands of years, I just thought, why did nobody tell me this when I was 12 or 13, when I had these tests to study for? Mm-hmm. So the writer Beverly Cleary once said, if the book you want isn't on the shelf, write it yourself. And that's what I did. That's what I did. This is the book I wish I could have read when I was, you know, junior high, high school.
That's what I heard about podcasts when I was a kid. They said to me, if the podcast you want to listen to isn't there, you have to make it. And they said, okay, all right, I'm going to write that down. And then that's what inspired me to get here today.
That's beautiful. Well, you and I are exactly alike in that respect.
Okay. All right. So Jacob, this is your vision. So let's hear the first tip.
Okay. And I'm going to deliberately start with some things that may sound pretty simple. And as we go on, we'll sort of build to some more complex techniques.
Okay.
So the what I sometimes call the first rule of memory is that the way to remember something hard is to link it to something easy. And as we go on, we'll find that almost every mnemonic or memory trick that we do is a variation on this, where there's something that's weird or hard to remember, and we find a way to link it to something that sticks in our minds more. Are there things that you naturally remember that come easy for you?
I mean, certainly, certain things that probably never forget. But why don't you give me an example of what would you say would be something like that?
Okay, well, I'll give you a classic example. Something, you know, there's all these distinctions people have a hard time remembering. Stalactite versus stalagmite is a classic one, right?
Yeah.
And one thing that makes things hard to remember is what's called interference, where there's different similar things that are sort of like interfering with each other and you don't know which one to pull out of your brain. But something that often makes things easier to remember is when they're visual, when there's like a funny picture associated with it. So a lot of mnemonics involve weird pictures that you make up. So for stalagmite, you might picture like a hole in the ground with all these gross mites, like little bugs crawling out of it. And sometimes things that are like gross or disturbing, you can remember more easily. For stalactite, you might picture like Batman, like, you know, the old campy 60s Batman with the bright tights hanging upside down from the ceiling, right? That's sort of a funny, weird image. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things that are funny, we remember more easily. So you've got the tights hanging from the ceiling and the mites coming from the bottom. And you've now got this slightly more vivid thing than just the abstract words stalactite and stalagmite. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, and one way, you know, that's great if you're studying for a test and you need to make some sort of distinction. One thing that I found useful in my practical life as a grown-up is, so every night before I go to bed, I go and I check and make sure that the gas stove top is off so we don't all die in the night.
Such a good idea.
Thank you. Yes, I am pro memory and anti dying while you sleep. I have strong opinions on these things.
Yeah.
Good. So once again, we're on the same page on that. I'm glad. But the problem is that what would happen is I'd get in bed and interference would happen because I have this memory of turning off the stove from like every night for the past year. I'd have no idea. Am I remembering that I did it today or am I remembering that I did it last week? And then I get up and I check it and I get back in bed and I drive myself crazy. So what I now do is when I get up to check the gas, I picture something in my mind that I only did that day. So like, I don't talk to you every day. So maybe now when I go to check the stove, I'll picture you, Rob Cesternino, checking my stove for me in the middle of the podcast.
Yes.
And it's such a weird image that I'm going to remember that. And then when it pops into my head, I'll be like, no, that can't be yesterday because I didn't talk to Rob yesterday.
This is, a good thing. I struggle with my version of this is, did I take my vitamin today? Did I take it? And then it's like, well, I'm not sure if I took it. I'm not sure. Now, do I take another one? What if I already took the vitamin? Now I'm taking two. Yes. Or maybe I'm taking zero. What am I doing? That my personal hack for this is that I have like two shelves, and on the odd number day or the even number day, I have to put the pill bottle on the shelf that's for odd number days or for even number days.
That is really smart. You've taken something that is sort of a big blur, which is just like all the days of your life, and you've made a distinction between odd or even, and you always know which one. I think that's great.
Well,
I think
that makes a lot of sense. Until it's we get to you know, a couple of days from now, and it's January 31st, and then it's February 1st right after that.
Oh. Yeah. There you go. Well, you can try using that my association trick. That's see if that helps. The problem with that now, if you're doing it first thing in the morning, you may have to think about something you did yesterday, and that may get confusing, but that could work.
Right. So, it is, you know, and like there's other things, like I was drinking too much coffee. I said, okay, let me take a caffeine pill once in a while instead of drinking so much coffee. But then sometimes I don't remember if I took the caffeine pill or not. And then it's like, well, I don't want to take two.
Yeah. It's exactly the same thing. So again, you can use this technique to help you remember.
Yes. Okay. So
the next time, if you take caffeine today, think of me.
Mm-hmm. True.
And even if that doesn't help with the caffeine, you'll have the pleasure of thinking of me and my dulcet tones. So it's a win-win.
Yeah. Well, this is useful for the things that I know I'm going to have to remember this later.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And the dream of a memory technique is that you hone your memory to the point where you don't have to try to remember things. You just see them and it's in your head like a memory. I don't know how to do that. I will tell you up front that most of these memory techniques involve sort of taking a pause and doing something active so that you remember it later on.
Okay.
That's just the nature of the techniques.
Okay. All right. Is that step one?
Yeah, that's step one. And so, I mean, that leads naturally into step two. And like I said, pretty much every memory technique we talk about is going to be taking something that's a little easier to remember and using that as a crutch or a tool to remember something harder. So one of the things that is really easy for most people to remember is the places we know well, right? Like if I asked you to picture the route you take from your bedroom to your studio every day, you've never studied that. That's just something I assume even after a move, you learn really quick. Mm-hmm. Am I right on that?
I haven't gotten lost yet.
Okay, good. Excellent. So that means that you are capable of using that for one of the most ancient and traditional memory techniques, which is sometimes it's called the mind palace. If you've seen Shock, he talks about his mind palace, or memory walk is maybe a more less fancy way of saying that. And this one, actually, the ancient Greek orators would use this to remember their speeches, because at that point, they were not necessarily literate. They were not necessarily talking to a literate crowd. So they use this technique. And the way it works is, so picture, I'll use some random words to remember, and we'll see if we can make them stick. So imagine it's the morning, right? You're in bed, you get up, and the first word I want you to remember is tree, right? So I want you to combine your real life bed with a tree in some really weird way. So there's like a tree growing out of your bed. Maybe that's why you woke up, because it like suddenly popped out of the bed and knocked you out. Mm-hmm. You got that image.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, great.
Do you want to hear my story or we're going to wait?
Please do. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, that Jacob, I basically live in a very close to the forest right now. And I often am laying in bed thinking like, I guess maybe this is how I'm going to go when a tree falls on me.
Okay, that's great. Well, this comes back to the idea. Sometimes scary things are more memorable.
Yeah.
The thing is, you're putting a story into it. And stories, we're storytelling animals. Mm-hmm. That, again, makes it more memorable. So you've got that first thing. Now, I don't know, maybe you have some sort of like bedside table where you like grab your phone first thing in the morning.
Yep.
So the second word is bun. Is there a way you can like take an image of a bun and combine that with your bedside table?
Yeah, yes. I could think of a way. Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to share that? Or is it a deeply personal conversation? Okay.
Personal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. So now there's another bun at the doorway.
Oh my God.
No, I'm sorry. Let's do something different. Let's do, there's actually a door within the door. This is a challenging thing because we're going to run into interference. And this will be the last one we'll do. In a real memory walk, you might have a huge number of items.
Okay. But here, so there's a door within a door.
Exactly.
Okay. So I'm trying to remember a door within a door.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So can you tell me, and I realize this is a simple example, but can you tell me the things that I've had you remember? What are the words you've remembered for your memory?
Tree, bun, door within a door.
Exactly. Yeah. So you could use this, for example, for a shopping list. And presumably your house has more than those three locations, so you could just keep adding on. I won't, you know, we could spend the rest of the podcast adding things on. Mm-hmm. And it's as simple as this method is. If you hear about somebody who's like memorized 10,000 digits of pi or something insane like that, they've probably used a memory walk technique mm-hmm. to do that. And now what I do is I have different places where I store different things. So I have like a standard memory walk that I'm going to reuse for like a shopping list. That's just like walking through the high school that I went to. I might have a memory walk that's like walking around like my current flat. I'm memorizing the presidents of the U.S. And so I've put the first 10 presidents in my brother-in-law's house.
And not everybody wants to remember
house.
All of them.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I may choose to forget.
Yes. But Jacob, let me just ask the question. Yes. So if this is me trying to remember my shopping list, am I like visualizing like, all of the items that I'm going to go and shop for at the grocery store, sort of like on a like Hansel and Gretel path through my house?
That's exactly right. And so you're, you know, the bigger your house is, the more you can remember, but you can also put stuff, you know, we went pretty quickly to your door. You could put stuff all around your room as long as you can keep those things distinctive. And what you find is that because it is such a natural thing to remember locations and paths within a location, that will stick with you much longer than you might expect.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And do you have any other questions? Oh, and by the way, just so you know, it doesn't have to be a real place either. Like if there's a video game level, you know, or if you've mm-hmm. watched the Harry Potter movies 100 times and you know Hogwarts like the back of your hand,
yeah,
you can store stuff there.
Okay. So, I guess that, is there a limit to how many things you could have in this list, or it's as far as you can go?
It's basically as far as you can go. And the more you get used to it, the more dense you can make it. But meaning you can store more things in a single room. Mm-hmm. But there really is no limit. And like I said, there's people who store like 10,000 digits of pi, and I'm assuming they have like a really epic walk to do that. But you can do this stuff.
So if I'm trying to remember my grocery list, where sometimes my wife will tell me, you go to the store, I need this and this and this and this and this. And I'm like, whoa. You got to write that down. But it's not the act of like visualizing me like in the grocery store, like where these things are. I have to like take the items out of the grocery store and put them in a different location.
That's right. And the reason you do that is that strange things stick out in your memory more than normal things. That makes sense. So you've seen these things 1,000 times in the store. So that's a normal thing that you have this interference with all the other times you've seen it. Whereas you probably have not seen a tree growing out of your bed or mm-hmm. a bun on your side table. And because those are weird things, they will stick in your memory longer.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I will try this next time that I get the Wegmans order.
Okay, very good. And if it doesn't work, have tell Nicole it is entirely my fault.
Yes, okay. I will give her your social media handles.
Excellent. Yeah. Even if this doesn't help you, you still win if you can blame it on me. Yes. That's a win.
Yeah. Okay, Jacob, got that. What's the next step?
Now, you'll notice we've been talking about pretty concrete things like groceries, trees, but the things that are really hard to remember are more abstract stuff like numbers, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So because I sort of waved my hands a little bit and I said, oh, people use this to memorize pi, but how do you use this to memorize numbers, right? Mm-hmm. So what you have to do, and now we're beginning to get maybe one step more elaborate, is you have a system that converts numbers, which are kind of all the same in abstract, into various concrete things. So the simplest one is just a rhyming system, where if you want to remember the number five, you picture a beehive, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to remember six, you picture sticks. If you want to remember three, you picture a tree. If you want to remember one, you picture a bun. If you want to remember four, you picture a door. Now, I don't know if this is sounding familiar, but what are the items that I had you put in your mind palace?
Okay.
Do you remember those?
Yeah. So it was a tree, a bun, and a door within a door. So yes. What you're telling me is that your ATM pin code is 3144?
Yeah, we're not broadcasting this podcast, right? This is a private one, purely. No, it's I made things confusing by saying door within a door, but just door. But so what I started you off was memorizing pi, 3 1 4. And if I'd had you put, you know, a hive, it's you know, another bun, then a hive, you've got 3.1415. And so this is how you memorize, if you want, a long number.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably don't need to memorize pi in your daily life, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you get a new ATM card and you've got to remember the PIN, this is a way of doing it. Because,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, a shopping list you can just write down, frankly. But your PIN, you don't really want to write it down and stick it in your wallet and carry it with you.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So in fact, I personally think that all ATM cards should come with a copy of my book, but I haven't been able to convince anybody of that yet.
Yeah. The bank should send it to you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so just to refresh now, so we said that the easiest way to remember something is to link it to something easy.
Yeah.
Things that are easy tend to be crazy things, funny things, or places you know. And then if you want to remember something abstract, you convert it to something concrete. If you're really remembering pi to 10,000 places, there's more elaborate number systems you might learn. But for pin codes, the whole rhyming thing is you don't need anything more than that. That's four numbers, maybe six.
And also, if you're remembering 10,000 numbers of pi, you could, you know, put that brain power to better use, right?
Yeah, I suppose there are probably things with your life you could do better than that.
The world has a lot of issues we could use your brain power on, stop it with pi.
You say that now, but one day when somebody jumps out of a dark alley and holds a knife to you and says, "What's the 4,000th digits of pi?" You're going to have some regrets.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. No, okay. I'm glad you've accepted the ultimate fate.
Yeah, there's nothing I could do.
That's a healthy attitude. This, by the way, brings us to one of the classic Survivor memory games, and here's where this can be useful for you even more than pi. Is this game, this concentration game, right? Where you've got a bunch of baskets on a bunch of different items. And one by one, one of your teammates lifts it up and then lifts another. So that's a sort of abstract thing, right? The objects themselves are usually concrete. There's an idol or a machete or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But where they are is this abstract place in a grid that's hard to remember. So one thing you can do is each place on a grid, you know, each place in this game, it's like you walk three up and one over, right? And there's a machete, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So you picture a tree, three, a bun, one. So maybe there's like a bun growing on a tree and then a machete cutting that bun off the tree. And again, that's like a weird image. Mm-hmm. It's going to stick in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've stored that. And hopefully, even if you're hungry and exhausted, that will help it stick in your mind until it's your turn to impress your tri-mates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hopefully, you know, maybe if I go back to Survivor and we have that challenge, this will be like my Slumdog Millionaire moment.
This is now your incentive to hide this podcast, because if it comes out, not only will people know my PIN, they'll know
we gotta promote it. Secret, we have to share this with the world, Jacob.
All right. It's like my rap voice. It's too great a gift to not share with humanity.
I
understand. Yeah. All right. That's very fair. So before we move on, I feel like that's sort of a natural stopping point, because, like I said, in a way, that's all that memory techniques are, is creating hard to remember creating ways of linking abstract things to concrete things.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have any questions about that, or are there other things you wish you could remember before we move on?
No, I think I have a good understanding of that.
Okay, that's great. So what we've talked about so far, these first three things, are ways of getting stuff into your head. But the problem is, how do you keep it there? Because, you know, as memorable as this is, if I meet you a month from now and I say, what three objects did I have you store in your bedroom? You might remember or you might not.
Mm-hmm. All right, you'll have to test me.
I will. Okay, well, actually, I want to have a regular monthly follow-up podcast from now on to test you on this.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. But if you can't arrange that, and if there's any neuroscientists, I know I'm simplifying this, but you can think about your short-term memory like a mailbox in front of your house, and your long-term memory is the house. So all you can really do, you put stuff in your short-term memory into that mailbox, and then part of your brain called the hippocampus decides to move that into the big house, into the long-term memory.
Okay.
And so often when people want to remember stuff, they cram it, right? You could just sit there going like, tree, bun, door, tree, bun, door, tree, bun, door. But what you're really doing is you're putting it again and again into that mailbox, and you're still dependent on a part of your brain you can't consciously control to move it into the house, into the long-term memory. So what scientists have found is that the best way to get something into your long-term memory is a process called spaced repetition, which sounds fancy. Basically, just means you study something and then you study it again a little while later. They've done studies that show that about 30 minutes after you study something, if I gave you a list of words to remember, 30 minutes from now, you would have forgotten about half of them. And a day later, you'd have forgotten like 70 to 80% of it. But if you review them half an hour from now, the act of reviewing them, even the ones you've forgotten, would signal to your hippocampus, to your brain, that this is important, that you want to keep it. And then that would let it stick a little bit longer so you could wait a day to review it. And then that would give you some more grace. You can now wait 3 days and 7 days and keep extending it. So if you have something that matters to you for the long term, which is, you know, not today's shopping list, but like the name of somebody you've met, then the way to really remember it is to set up a system so you will keep coming back to it, not every day, but at ever longer intervals, to signal to your brain that it's worth retaining. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's interesting. So the things that, you know, I feel like that I do have a good recall on stuff like, you know, all of the survivor information, because of what I do, you know, it happens. And then because of like doing the podcast, I have to constantly go back to it. And so that's the kind of stuff that's long-term memory as opposed to other stuff where like, say like another show I might podcast about that I have no recollection about, but you know, because we don't constantly talk about that show, I really have almost no memory of it.
Exactly. And probably like if you do a podcast of that show the next day, right after that podcast, you would feel really confident in your memory of it. You feel like you've got it down cold, but even so, like a month later, it would still be gone.
Yeah.
So clearly the memory technique is to do like a week of podcasts on anything you want to remember. If you have a conversation with Nicole, you have like all your correspondence in to sort of talk about that, and then you won't forget what she said. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But if that for some reason is not practical, then you could use flashcards instead. And what we've been talking about before this is sort of low commitment stuff you can do in the moment, like coming up with images. Doing flashcards requires like a little bit of effort and preparation. Again, not worth it for your grocery list. But I've got a flashcard app on my phone, and I am naturally really bad with faces and names. So this is an embarrassing thing to admit, but I'm going to tell it to you because I wish people were more open with how bad we are at remembering stuff. When I meet somebody, I will like get their photo off Facebook and put it in my flashcards with their name and quiz myself. And if you have a good flashcard program, it will then keep track of those intervals. So, you know, if I didn't know who you were and I met you, I'd then review your name and your face like a day later. And then my flashcards would give it to me again 3 days later and a month later. And then when I met you 5 years from now and I remember who you were, you'd be like, you have an amazing memory. Mm-hmm. But I have the same memory everyone does, maybe even worse. It's just, I'm just doing that spaced repetition, that steady review at growing intervals.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Jacob, what an honor it would be to get into your flashcard program.
So I will tell you that the flashcard program that I use is one called Anki. I'm not going to to give you my actual flashcards, because you'd be amazed at like how many things I need to study that normal human beings remember. But I like a program called Anki. That's a very popular
one. How do you spell that?
A-N-K-I. And that's available for Windows, Mac, iPhone, Android. If you want something that's maybe a little prettier to look at and a little easier to use, there's an app called CleverDeck, but that's only available for like iPhone and iPad. I like Anki because I'm really nerdy and it lets about the stuff and it lets me really adjust things and tweak the timing. Mm-hmm. If you just want something you can just download and use, CleverDeck is also a great option.
Okay.
So for me, that has, of all the memory stuff, like, you know, memorizing presidents or whatever is sort of like a fun party trick, but actually knowing people's names makes a big difference and really makes my life better.
The greatest party trick of them all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. By the way, this is, as a side thing, another technique that I've learned, if you don't want to go all in on the flashcards, a trick to help you remember people's names is before they introduce themselves, you ask yourself a silly question about them. You say, if this person were a superhero, what would their secret identity be? Or if they were an animal, what animal would it be? And doing that creates this weird, funny link in your head with their face, which helps it be a little stickier, helps mm-hmm. it stick a little bit better.
I find that I don't so much have a problem with that part of it. What I have the problem with is that sometimes the person says their name and I forgot to do that. Like, I need to remember, like, if I can, like, okay, got it. You are this person. Got it. Okay. And then I have it. But then they said their name and I'm like, I missed it. All right. I'm done. That's it. I didn't get it.
Yep, absolutely. And there is this event horizon where it becomes, by the time you realize you don't know it, it's too late. Like, if you had asked 5 seconds sooner, you could have asked mm-hmm. them to repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a perfect lead-in to number five, which is about what's called prospective memory. And I feel like a lot of the other memory stuff is fun and useful, but the thing that changed my life, as much as memorizing names with spaced repetition, is this thing called prospective memory. And so far we've been talking about what's called retrospective memory, which is remembering stuff from before. And believe it or not, that is not the only kind of memory there is. There's remembering to do stuff in the future, remembering to go into the store when you pass it, remembering to notice somebody's name when they say it to you, remembering to take your caffeine pill later today. And I feel like those are the things, once you're out of school, that are maybe even more important than memorizing pi, as important as it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things that people know to do for prospective memory. The classically tying a string around your finger to cue yourself, to signal yourself that you see it and that triggers your memory. But there's a technique that I learned that is not widely known, maybe because it feels really goofy when you're doing it, but it actually works.
Okay.
So go back to our store example. If you want to remember to stop by the store, you're going to go for a walk and you had to remember to stop by the grocery store, what you would do when you're home, the moment Nicole asks you to go to the store, you picture yourself, you stand there and you close your eyes and you actually mime walking to the store. And I'm so sad that your viewers can't see my amazing miming ability right now, but I'm actually miming it as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in your head, you make that as vivid as you can. You imagine the sights and sounds of as you're walking. And when you get to the point where you would enter the store, you physically mime standing there. As you're standing there in reality in your home, you actually turn the way you would. You mime walking to the store. You mime taking things off the shelf. And as goofy as it looks, there's a neurological principle behind that, which is, neurons that wire together fire together.
Right. And I'll never forget the stuff because it will be so ingrained in my memory because my wife will just make fun of me and then it will be so traumatic that I'll never forget where I was, like the time that my wife just made me feel humiliated.
Exactly. And then, and even if you forget to bring it back, yeah. she'll still be laughing from the thing you did before. So it'll all be okay. She'll have a good day nonetheless.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. But so you mime, okay, the act of going to the store, I'm opening was that the freezer case you opened?
Yeah. Yes. My mime was so specific. You could probably even see the brand of ice cream I was taking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the reason that works is that when you imagine something, you fire a lot of the same neurons in your brain that you do when you actually do it in real life. So, and when you fire different sets of neurons together, when you think about two things at the same time, you're training your brain to link those in the future. So just by imagining that you've associated all those different actions and by acting out whichever ones you could, you're training your brain to associate those actions. So when you're out walking down the street, it will fire that like turning into the store kind of neuron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as goofy as I know this sounds, if you've ever watched the Olympics and you look at the skiers in the Winter Olympics, while they're waiting to begin their run, they've got their eyes closed. They've got their poles under their arms and they're doing exactly what I'm talking about. They're miming. They're like leaning to the left, to the right. They're in their mind. They're going down, you know, this ski thing at 80 miles an hour or whatever, and they're imagining the turns they're going to take. They're linking those neurons in their minds mm-hmm. of the various actions they take at the different moments.
Yeah. No, so I've heard of this before. I feel like the study about like a team that like actually did basketball practice and then a team that like just visualized that they were doing basketball practice. And like, there was not that big of a drop off between the team that just like visualized their practice and the team that actually had the practice.
That's yes, that makes total sense. I didn't know about this as a study, but from that, I'm going to include that I've played Survivor dozens of times. So I'm going to be like a returning wow. player if I ever get on the show that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, how, you know, long do your visualizations go?
I guess about 40 minutes once a week.
Oh, okay. So you just play that week. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm sorry. This brings me to something that's actually important to talk about going back to spaced repetition, which is that, when I watch Survivor, I'm being passive. I'm not like imagining it really. I'm just watching it. To make things stick in your mind, you really need to test yourself on them. So like when I review the names of people, I'm not just like looking at their photo with a name on it. I'm looking at a photo and making myself pull that name out of my mind. Again, it's a way of signaling to my brain that it's important, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you can tell my prospective memory was not working properly because I should have mentioned that back when we were talking about spaced repetition. But
mm-hmm. look, when we visualize the next one, we'll get it.
Okay, excellent. Very good. So, do you have any questions about that, by the way, before I go on to number six?
Space repetition?
So space repetition, yeah, that was number four.
Okay.
In fact, speaking of space repetition, let's quickly review because that will help people remember. So how do you remember something that's hard to remember? I'm quizzing you to help you remember.
You're quizzing me. Okay.
I am.
You're asking the first step was?
Yes.
Create a mnemonic device. I think that's the right idea. I don't know if that's what you called it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And a mnemonic device is just a way of taking something hard and linking it to something easy. So mm-hmm. that's exactly right. You've mm-hmm. got to create a mnemonic device by coming up with something easy and linking it to that weird, hard thing you want to remember.
Yeah.
And then we had a memory walk.
Yes.
And do you remember the objects from your memory walk?
Yeah, the tree, a bun, and a door within a door.
Exactly. So by quizzing you on them, I'm helping you remember them a little bit longer, which is great because mm-hmm. I know that tree, bun, door within a door will be could save your life, again, if they ask you the numbers of pi. We talked about spaced repetition. And do you remember what spaced repetition is?
That's when we are going through the motions of a thing before we do it.
Ah, No, that spatial repetition is when you is what we're doing now. It's okay. when you review something at interval. But the good news is that if you forget something.
See, in my mind, spaced, like I was thinking of like sort of like a geometric space. Like this is like a period of time. That's the spaced repetition.
That makes total sense. And by the way, the good news is that once you understand that sort of how spaced repetition works, if you quiz yourself on something and you forget it and you get it wrong, that's not a bad thing. The sort of the annoyance of getting it wrong helps you actually remember it, helps signal to your brain that it matters to you. So the spaced repetition process doesn't mean you get everything right all the time. Mm-hmm. That if you're studying something and you get it wrong, in a way, that's a good thing. It means you've waited long enough to make it a little bit difficult. And sometimes that difficulty helps you remember it more the next time.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So the last thing that I want to talk about is less a technique and more why these matter. Because, and we've talked about this some, we've talked about how like remembering 10,000 digits of pi doesn't really help you or help the world, but remembering names, remembering what people have said to you, that matters. And so I would just encourage people to think about the things they want to remember. I know that for me, when I first learned these techniques, I thought they were so cool that I wanted to use them to memorize, you know, all the presidents in order and what parties they were. And then I at some point realized that doesn't make my life better. So the specific thing I've been remembering for the past few years that really has made a difference to my life, especially during the past 2 years of the pandemic, is at the end of every day, I look back on the day and I choose one happy memory. And it could be a big thing like a wedding. It could be a little thing like making my kids laugh. And I make a note of that in my flashcard system because I'm a total nerd. But I use these techniques to try to hang on to those memories. And for even people who don't want to go as crazy in on it as I am, I want to suggest an exercise. And I think if you take one thing away from this podcast, I think it'd be this, which is at the end of the day, take a happy memory and write down a question about it. So, you know, what did I say that made my kid giggle when I picked him up from school? Or, you know, what was my wife wearing when I said she looked especially beautiful before we went out to dinner, whatever that thing is. Mm-hmm. And the phrasing of it that way is a question and an answer that when you go back and flip through your journal and quiz yourself on these things, you're forcing yourself to pull out the answers to these questions. And by doing that, you wouldn't think that would make a difference. You'd think that the importance of the memory would make it stick.
Yeah.
But the act of pulling it out really underlines that and helps you hang on to it.
If I may ask, at what point of the day are you doing the writing? Have you gotten into bed? Are you brushing your teeth? Where is the time to do this?
So I usually do it at the end of the day. Before I brush my teeth, I sort of sit down and I review my flashcards. And that's a natural time to look back on the day mm-hmm. and choose an image. And if you're really hardcore, you can then do spaced repetition. You can quiz yourself on what you did yesterday, a week ago, a month ago. But even if you don't, just the act of choosing a memory and writing it down increases the odds that you'll remember it mm-hmm. as life goes on.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's really good. I'm just trying to figure out a way to like work that into the routine. I'm wondering maybe like a notes. Well, can I do it on a notes app?
Absolutely. Yeah. Whatever works for you. So now in a sense, we come back to prospective memory, which is how do you remember to do it? There's something called a linking cue, where also known as habit stacking, where if there's something you already do, you brush your teeth every night, you put your notebook underneath your toothbrush. And then when you pick up your toothbrush, you see the notebook mm-hmm. and that triggers the memory to write it down.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be fancy. It can be as simple as that.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good one.
And I recommend it at any time, but especially during the pandemic when every day has seemed like every other day, it's actually really cool to look back and go, oh, you know what? This is something, even a little thing, this is a cute dog I patted or a joke I shared that made this day different than every other darn day for the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, That's really good. I'm wondering if like if I took a picture of these things also, like when they're happening.
Yeah, definitely. And I will sometimes do that. Like during the day, I'll take a picture, and then at the end of the day, I'll use that picture to remind me what I wanted to remember. The tip I'll give you is that you still need to leave room to quiz yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you do take a picture, still look at the picture and ask yourself, you know, what was it that was special about this moment? Some other try to remember some detail that's not in the picture just to make your brain work that little bit harder.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's really cool. That's a really good one.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And like I said, everything else is fun and cool and a cool party trick. But if you do that, I think it makes a difference in your life.
I mean, that's something that I really struggle with. I work from home. I take my kids to school in the morning. But other than that, I really, every day kind of like bleeds into the next. So not that I'm complaining about these days, but in terms of like remembering like which day was that? That would be, I think, something that would be very helpful.
Yeah, I 100%. And the other thing is, once you start doing that for a while, you know that at the end of the day, you're going to have to find some unique thing about the day. And sometimes I will like walk to a different place just because I know at the end of the day, I need something different about the day mm-hmm. to remember. And it makes me do these little different things that make my life a little bit more varied than it would otherwise be.
Yeah. All right. Jacob, is that it? That's the six steps?
That's it. That's the six steps to remembering things better.
Okay. If you want to check out Jacob's book, How to Remember Everything, whether it's for yourself or if there's a young person that you know is going to be going through a lot of these tests that they give them in the in all different levels of schooling, great gift. Paperback or Kindle on Amazon or wherever books are sold.
Absolutely. And I hope people enjoy it.
Yeah. All right, Jacob, what else do you have going on besides working on the memory techniques?
My most recent book is a picture book called Princess Unlimited, about a feisty princess who saves her kingdom. And other than that, just, you know, constantly plugging away on whatever the next book is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Jacob, thank you for coming on and making some time to go through all of this with us. And then, of course, were you happy that we found the space ultimately for the Survivor social media?
I was. It was a sort of exciting journey in itself, and I'm just, it's fun to be part of the show, so I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I didn't have a place really to do it, and then I felt like that as Survivor 41 went along, I felt like that the feedback show, I felt like got a little bit more of a sense of like what the feedback show was supposed to be again, and so of course the Survivor social media always a big part of that.
Well, that makes sense. And of course, because this was a new era in Survivor, because they dropped the four and kept the one, you had to start from scratch as well.
I had to start from scratch. I didn't know necessarily what I wanted to do. I mean, the format of the podcast has gone through many different iterations over the years and, you know, still a fluid process.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Jacob, where can people find you on social media, like when my wife goes looking for you after I forgot one of the things she needed at Wegmans?
Okay, so if your wife is angry at me, my Twitter handle is a Mike Bloom type.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But for everybody else, it's Jacob SW at Twitter. I'm also on Instagram, but I Twitter is really the only one that I regularly use.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Jacob, this was great to go through all of this with us. Thank you again for making the time to do this. I'm hoping that we can start putting some of these techniques to use. And if you are somebody who is finding these techniques useful, definitely, let us know on social media, okay?
Definitely. Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
All right. Thanks again, Jacob. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.